Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Hanging Tender. This is a podcast that was supposed to have started a while ago, but we are glad it finally got to start. Thank you, Chef Prado, for being here. My name is Sadiq, also known as the Nigerian Cowboy. And today we are going to talk about a dinner that we're having here at the Borai 817 South Staples in this wonderful building that is a historical marker that used to be owned by Mr. Chancellor for Chancellor's Meat Market. And it was also a Superior Ice Cream. It was also a muffler shop. It was a bunch of things. But we're just so glad that when Nathan and Ursula decided to purchase this building and start a shop here, they decided to keep a lot of the history that made this part of town what it is. And so we are happy to continue the legacy of all those who came before us. And today we have Chef Prado, as I've mentioned before, who is going to be the head chef for this particular dinner that we're having for two nights. It's almost sold out. I'm sorry this podcast is coming out a little late, but it's almost sold out. So if you still have time, please go on our website, www.borai.com, and register for this dinner. It's going to be a five-course meal, and Chef Prado is going to go through it with us today. So, Chef Prado, thank you so much for coming on The Hanging Tender.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be part of the first eight.
Yeah. So, thank you. So, Chef Prado, we're just going to get a little bit of background on you. First of all, when you were a lot younger, what was your favorite thing to cook?
My favorite thing to cook, amazingly... Wow, it's a commitment of something. My favorite thing? The first thing I learned how to cook was eggs.
Okay.
Eggs. I would make eggs for my cousins. I would take care of my cousins when my grandparents went around. So I always cook some kind of egg. My favorite thing to cook is omelets. I like to make omelets. Omelets and eggs benedict.
Huh.
It's like, as much as I don't go to lunch, I enjoy making
eggs. Yeah. Have you ever had, one of my favorite things growing up, but we used to say eggs, is that scotch egg, you know? Have you ever had,
Scotch egg, those are so far to me. I think in like the last 10 years, I've had one.
Yeah.
And I think it wasn't even in Texas.
Yeah. we'd get with on our British game. That's true. Oh, man. And as you say that, I remember the first time I came to this country, I was in East Texas. It was like the state fair, I believe that's what it was. And we went out. My coach took us out to go to eat. And it was like everything was fried. You got turkey legs fried. You got ice cream fried. Didn't even know you could fry Coca-Cola. I was like, how do you fry Coca-Cola? You know, so.
We go to the state fair regular in my family. And I've had fried bacon, fried butter, fried Oreos, fried Twinkies. I've had like a list of fried.
Sometimes I'm like, if I grew up in America, I probably would have my heart would probably just like give out. Yeah, there you go.
Fried butters, fried bacon.
Yeah, I've never had fried bacon.
I would say get a fryer.
Yeah, I'm not gonna get fried. Yeah, but I will try it at least once, just so .
And the state fair, like, it's so amazing,
right? Texas, right? Well, speaking about something that is unique, this dinner. So, how did this dinner come about? Why did you choose to?
So I met Nate, I guess about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I had just taken over a place in Port Aransas, and I was having a hard time finding good quality steak. And, you know, like, I'd bring in my own, and then the labor involved behind it wasn't bad, but, you know, we were going through so many steaks that, like, it was taking three of us to clean steaks, cut steaks, and I was like, I could find a better way. And then another friend of mine, a chef, told me about this place. So I came in, talked to Nate, and I've been a fan since. Like, start getting tenderloins, filet mignon from him. I got ribeye. I've come in. I've gotten, like, I think I've gotten everything from the case one time. At least one time. And then we stayed doing business there for 3 years together. He became my exclusive protein dealer.
Yeah.
And then when I moved back to this gastro club in Corpus, first person I looked up was, you know, I came, like, changed the menu to put more of his stuff on there. We started doing a bratwurst for a dinner, which I don't know if the place still does it, but, you know, the brats here are amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, people were already, like, in the head, they didn't think they'd like it, but, like, we started selling brats. We started selling the brine pork, the pork chops.
Yeah.
And then we started selling boudin for breakfast.
So, like,
it was boudin with potato hash, sunny side up egg, and a chorizo hollandaise.
Hey.
And we would just tear into that boudin. And then I went to another place after I left there. I went to another place. I started buying short rib to braise, a braised short rib, Denver steak.
Mm, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Steak, and I started buying some Terrace Majors.
Terrace Majors, yeah.
Yeah, so now my next thing is, like, wherever I go next, what am I going to buy? Really, like, it helps me because it's good quality, but I also like to put the name on them. So people know you come get it.
Yeah.
They come to Boar, you get it.
Like, yeah.
You know, like, I remember when we first started talking about stuff, and he's said, what do I call it? I was like, and we kicked around the name The Worst, and he's called it The Worst Bar Ever. And he's like, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we met. And that's how I've always, like, you know, even for my own cooking and coming.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, so for me as well, ever since I started, like, just hanging out in here, just, like, I hardly get anything anywhere else. Like, all my meals, you just get it from here, you know?
It's easier. Like, once a week, we get worse from here for the house. I try to get pork belly line when I remember.
Yeah.
I do some private caterings, and I'll come get my produce from here, too, the steaks. And so, like, you know, people in San Antonio are going to know about Boring, people in Austin, people, you know?
Yeah.
That's, like, you know, like, that's the one thing I tell them. You know, I'm really big on talking people where, you know, like, where I get my stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so we had talked about it. We've always kicked it around about doing a dinner. And we've done a thing or two here at a lunch, and then he lets me come help with lunch.
Yeah.
And we had always talked about, like I said, about doing it.
Yeah.
A full dinner. And then I think the opportunity came up this year that we had a chance to actually sit down and decide to do it. I had availability, get availability, and me, him, and Josh decided, okay, let's do it. So we picked a date, and here we are.
Yeah.
A week away.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so everybody, make sure you go and you grab yourself some, you get, like, a ticket to have this dinner. So, so chefs, usually. So, how long have you been a chef?
Professionally, I've been cooking, he's in it to support myself, about 20 years.
Okay.
I cooked growing up, and I cooked on and off to pay bills, help pay for school when I was in Kingsville. Then when I moved back to Corpus to help pay for school in Corpus. And then one day it just dawned on me that this is what I wanted to do. So I started cooking. I was still a cook then, still a line cook. I started to realize, like, you know, I could do more. I could be more. And I had people pouring to me, telling me I could be more, some good mentors along the way. And then when I got to the yacht club, it really clicked in. One of my chefs there was, like, really big on, like, why don't you do this? You can do this.
Yeah.
And I put my head down, like, started absorbing everything I could, reading every book I could, some culinary school. And I finally, just in the last 5 years, got my chef certificate, which is a certificate from the American Culinary Federation, which involves, like, two tests, like two, I think I've talked about it before, brutal tests.
Yeah.
No, brutal, they're hard. One's a written test, like 100, 150 questions. You have to know French. You have to know recipes from a book that's over 100 years old. You have to know management, budgeting. You know, you have to, like, have a vast knowledge of what it takes to earn the executive part, you know, like, you're a manager.
Like the whole business of,
yeah, you have to understand, like, okay, cost. Can I cost out a menu? Can I price out a menu? what's my profit? What's my labor look like?
Yeah.
And you know, you think you're never gonna use those, but I've used those so many times. And then there's a cooking test, and it's like a 3.5-4 hour cooking test where you're judged by chefs who've been doing this for like probably way longer than, you know, 3-4 times I have, and they're very discriminating. They're like, look at everything. They like, as you're cooking,
yeah,
they're standing over you, clipboards. It's daunting, but at the same time, it's really exciting and nerve-wracking.
Yeah. And so I also, I believe I've heard you talk about that you've been to the FBI to cook?
Oh, the CIA.
CIA.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's the Culinary Institute of America. I get to go to the campus. I've been to the campus 3 times in San Antonio. It's the like premier culinary school to me in America.
Yeah.
I think everywhere, you know, the CIA, it's like.
It's the CIA.
Yeah. You know, people, you say CIA, you know, like.
It's, yeah.
You know, but yeah, I've gone there a couple times, take some classes, some refresher classes. And it's phenomenal. You see.
Do you like teach you about like the food security or something? Like, I kind of get the connection between the.
Oh, no. It's just they just teach you everything about food. Like, it's funny that their initials are like CIA, but they it's like if you went somewhere and everybody who knows everything about this industry were there.
Yeah.
As you know, like you go and you're like, I know nothing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I just think it's cool to tell people I used to work for the CIA.
No, oh, yeah.
And then people were like, okay, it's Culinary Institute of America. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. People though. So
people were like, oh, we're a Fed. I was like,
Fed, yeah. No, not that kind of Fed.
Yeah.
The food was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, that is extensive. So you do that every single year? You just go?
I haven't gone this year. This year, instead of going, I went and in January, it's already been a while, I went and studied with a certified master chef. So in America, there's only 67 master chefs.
In the whole country?
In the whole country. In all of America, there's only 67.
After over 350 million people?
Yeah. Just, yeah.
Lord have mercy.
So I think what it is, like, I told you about this before, but when you become a certified executive chef,
yeah,
before you can even begin to wrap your head around the fact that I want to become a master chef, you have to have 10 years as a certified executive chef. So, you know, like that's a labor, right? That's the first daunting task is like, okay, I have to do this for 10 years. The whole time you're doing, you have to get continuing education hours. You have to keep studying. You have to keep honing your craft.
Yeah.
And then after the 10 years, you gotta apply. And then you can't even, there's another process where you have to have the sponsorship of 2 certified master chefs. So that whole 10 years, you have to spend cooking, honing your skills, obviously working, obviously your family.
Yeah.
And then you have to network so that you can meet the master chefs.
Right.
And know them well enough that they can be like, okay, I vouch for
them.
So it's like, wow, it's very intense.
That is intense.
And, I met this chef and it was in Washington and he was on a whole nother level. Like it just blew my mind. Like, you know, one of the last days there, he's like, all right, I'm going to do a presentation for y'all. And he turns off the lights. A strobe starts going off. There's smoke. And he starts doing a dessert presentation on a plate with glow-in-the-dark sauces and glitter. And it was just mind-blowing. Yeah. I was like, you know, nothing I had ever thought of. Nothing that I've seen in Corpus. Nothing,
yeah.
You know, nothing I had seen till then. And I was like, yeah, I gotta crack the books more. And I came back from that knowing that, like, since then, like, and this is not a joke, every 1 to 2 weeks, I've read a new cookbook.
Yeah.
I will read another book by a chef so that I keep going. Like, you know, like, I read a book a week, like, continuing to pour into myself and try to, like, help other people because it's rough. Like, these guys know everything, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they started saying things where I was like, I don't know what you're saying. I'm going to write this down and look this up later.
So is it like, so those books, is it like their recipes that they have in the book?
Yeah, it used to be like cookbooks, like old school cookbooks, basically. But then a lot of chefs and a lot of people have stories. So now it's more involved. Like, you know, they tell their story and then you get some recipes and, you know, like you get the background to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you want to know like what, you know, Da Vinci was thinking when he painted the Sistine Chapel. And so it's like if he had written down in his diaries and notebooks that, and so these chefs are putting their recipes out there and then you get the picture of it And it's a very detailed story behind it because, you know, they have a story to tell. And it's interesting. But it's very, like, sometimes the ingredients in there, you know, they're like, oh, I don't even know what that is. Like, you have to find ingredients that, like, you're not going to find in Corpus.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to find anywhere, really. So, you know. So you have to how to outsource.
So it's like, what is the oldest, like, chef book you've read?
I read the Escoffier.
Okay.
The Escoffier, French. Escoffier is the guy who, he's a chef. They used to call him the king of chefs and the chef of kings. He got in the kitchen. He was military. Got in the kitchen, organized the kitchen to the brigade system that it is now. Before, it was just like cooks running around doing whatever. He got in there, he's like, okay, this does this, this does that. He created a hierarchy.
Okay.
And the hierarchy was so powerful that, like, it's standard. Like, you know, after he did it, everybody was like, oh, yeah, this is the right way. And that's where the French Brigade came from.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was Escoffier. And his the Escoffier, the recipes in there are very exact and very detailed. For you to cook a recipe from there, when they test you on it, you have to do it in that order. Like if it says sweat onions, add butter, add salt, add white wine. You don't put white wine, then go add onions. You do it by the...
Okay. Very, very particular.
Yes, his is the... It's not even a staple. It's like the law.
Yeah.
You know, like the Escoffier says onions first.
Onions first.
You don't go from it.
Okay. Okay, that makes so much sense now, because what I know about chefs is watching shows, so.
Yeah, like the bear, and they're like,
yeah, oh, right.
You know, that's the system right there.
Okay.
And, you know, like, you have to apply that everywhere. You know, like, I worked in, like, brunch places where we would do it, too. Everybody's like, hey, you know, don't run around. That's your station. Stay there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So much smoother.
That actually makes a lot of sense, because, like, if it's kind of like, let's say, building cars or putting stuff together, like, if you stay in one section, then you really get in that one section, then everything moves a lot faster. Yeah,
it is. And people, like, I've worked in some kitchens, and I get there, and people are just running around. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Oh, we're not doing this.
So, yeah.
You stay there. You know, like, and you find where people go, and it's a good management skill, because sometimes a person who thinks they want to work grill isn't the right person. And you have to, you know, be like, this isn't for you.
This is, yeah.
You got to put you over, you have to put the right tools in the right places.
This is, yeah,
just stuff like that. You know, if you're not putting the right people in the right places, you're doing them a disservice because they're not going to ever enjoy it. And you're doing yourself a disservice because they're never going to get it.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's the first book I ever read. And it was hard to understand.
So, in like this, coming to this dinner, are you going to have the same? Are you going to have like people running around? Or are you going to do this all yourself?
No, I'm going to.
Because, I mean, obviously, it's like limited tables.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
We're aiming for 16 a night, these first two. And then the next couple we're doing, because we're not going to do it every month, or we haven't talked about every month, but maybe every couple months.
Okay.
No, this is like I created a menu where it's 16 people and I could serve probably like 30 by myself.
Yeah.
You know, and in courses, it's easier because I'll be back there just guiding the tempo, you know?
Yeah.
We set it so that we have enough time to, I'll start with the first course, send it out, have time to come talk about it. They'll talk about the wine.
Okay.
I'll go back. I'll start the next course. People are eating and there's a nice like organic flow to it. It won't be rushed. It won't be like, you know, like, oh, everybody's rushing. This is at our pace, controlled. We're not going to do a turn and burn service, which is like a turn for like when you go somewhere and they're like, bring your food as fast as you can to get you out.
To get the table. Someone else will get the table. Okay.
This is, you know, like the first seating. Our first seating.
Yeah.
And we're going to serve everybody at the same time. It'll give everybody a chance to gain that sense of community that like.
Right.
You know, like where you have time to talk, you know, like sit there. What do you think about this? Or what do you think about that?
Right.
Talk about the wine, encourage people to, you know, like, you know, you come to people, meet a new couple, meet some more friends, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll move on to the second course, third course. We'll control it in a way that it's enjoyable, but it's not going to take all night.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you go to these things and you're barely finishing one plate, another plate's coming down, and you're like, I didn't really get to enjoy
it.
Yeah, you have to, it takes time. When I was a young cook, you know, me too, I just wanted to rush. And then you have to realize that it's more of a finesse to it.
Yeah.
You have to like give one course, enjoy it, let it wash through the palate, and then move on.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to rush somebody when they're...
Yeah. This just reminded me back in when I was doing my... Back in school, we read this book by a gentleman. It's more of a theology book, but in particular, he has this thing. His name is Norman Wisbar. He's a professor at Duke University, and he wrote this book called... it's like essentially how food is like fellowship, you know, like when you eat a meal,
yeah,
kind of having that communion with other people, they get into understand like you at that table. Obviously, it gets more theological to it, so we don't. That is not the point of this, but it's like essentially he's just talking about how when you come at a table, everyone is like welcome and everyone needs fellowship and like. But that fellowship allows you, as you're saying, people get to like experience or even talk to one another, build community, build friendships, build around this one meal that you obviously it has like a more theological leanings talking about communion and all of that. But but it's the same, like the notion of someone coming to a table, sitting down and eating and getting to meet someone that they've never met before, you know, and have a meal with them,
get
to know them a little bit. You know, they might get to know you a little bit, and now you start fellowshipping, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, also background stuff. Yeah, like, me and my wife are very religious.
Yeah.
We're faithful.
Yeah.
I don't know what the right word is, religious.
No words. No.
We used to run life groups, and we've been in life groups, and one of the things that they encourage in, like, a small group, life group church, church-like group is to have a meal together.
Right.
So before we would start any of the lessons, we'd eat.
Yeah.
Or we'd start the lessons in the middle, eat.
Right.
Because, you know, it does bring a sense of community, and it gives you a chance to, you know, like, you don't always know the 12 people you're with.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, once you start eating, like, you know, like, maybe you both like the same thing the same way.
Yeah.
I like this too. But yeah, it does. Food is like, to me, one of the base, what's the word? Equalizers in the world. Like, if you can sit there with somebody you don't know at a table and not talk, I don't know what your problem is. You know, like, I don't see how you can do that. You know, like, even me, like, if I go, I rarely go eat anywhere by myself.
Yeah.
But if I go down somewhere and eat by myself, and somebody asks me something, I try to talk to somebody because, like, it's kind of hard just to sit there by yourself eating. Like,
right.
Because, you know, sometimes it's like, this is so good. Like, hey, did you think this was good? Like, you want to share that.
Yeah, you want to share with someone. And as you say, after this before, it reminds me of the saying we say in Nigeria. We say, he who eats alone dies alone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like essentially, you know, like you got to, communion is like, I think is one thing that we as human beings, we like to come together and eat, you know. So I think that's why, and also it's not too crowded. So 15, 16 people, it's pretty like very intimate and you get to know people as well. You get to meet other people and you get to experience food. Like the art of food. I think this is what this is, you know, because you can have like the experience of, oh, I want quick food, you know, fast casual or whatever. I'm gonna cook. But if you want like an experience of sitting down and eating the meal that someone has curated, someone has taken the time to prepare every single minute detail of how that food comes to your table, I think that's something special.
And I think what people don't understand is like, so, you know, it's going to be 15 other people that you come here and you get food with all the time. Like that's the common thread, you know, like your little Venn diagram, Bori is the place, you know, like everybody comes here. So like, that's where that sense of community I feel deepens because, you know, like, oh, did you get this? Oh, have you tried this? And, you know, like, I always tell people to get the worst when I get fantasy people.
Yeah.
Cause those worst, I don't know what Josh does back there.
Oh man, they are good. I can't even, I'm not going to tell Josh, but it's really good. I got a couple the other day and I decided to smoke them. I didn't even poach them. I just smoked them.
Oh, really?
I said smoke, but like I have like a little Weber grill.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
And then I put an offset and I just cooked them in there. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
They're so good.
They are. Like sometimes we'll bake them at the house just to try something different.
And, yeah.
You know, bake them, boil them, fry them. I've never had a bad one.
Yeah.
And I know what he does back there. And I've helped out back there. And
yeah.
I never see what he does. Like, you know, it's like a magician. Like,
yeah.
Look, he's already done them. You know, like, I know he gets here at 6 in the morning to do them. So
that's
the secret, doing when nobody's...
They take their time. They make them. They do a good job.
I don't think I've had a bad one. I know, you know, like, they have the hamburger one. They have the jalapeno cheese.
Yeah.
My favorite is actually the boudin.
Yeah,
the boudin one's really good.
Boudin's really good. I had, I think last night I had the garlic onion one.
Oh, it's
so good.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them.
They are. They're also good. And like you get them, you're like, man, you know, like how?
Yeah.
How are you doing it? And I don't think people realize it. Like, I think people see them and they're like, well, I don't know how to cook them.
Yeah.
It's easy. Throw them in the oven for 15 minutes.
That's the thing about food as well. You start to learn what you like.
Yeah.
You know, when you start to cook on you for yourself, you know,
yeah.
I don't know, like, it just starts to see me, well, I like this, I don't like that, I like this, I don't like that.
Like, I like mine with a little color on them.
Yeah.
So I throw mine in the oven to bake.
Yeah.
And also, it helps me control the time, so I don't have to be watching what.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of them are better boiled, like, they have a different taste, you know, little than a bite. But there's no wrong with those. Those are good.
Yeah.
And then lunch, like, I can understand why, you know, I sell so many of them.
Yeah.
And that the short rib burger, the buffet. Buffet's good.
Yeah, buffet's
good. Yes. I helped out yesterday. And I think, you know, we sold like 35 buffet.
Easily. Yeah, that's a lot of burgers.
Yeah.
A lot of
burgers.
And it's like everything is like, it gives you have a different appreciation for stuff because it's like, it's all handmade. Everything is made in here.
Yeah.
We don't make large batches. Everything is very small. And even like, because we have like the dry aged and the steaks that you're going to be using as well. It's like it's not like a big production of food.
No, it's not. And that's what makes it so good. The artisanal feel of that, like it's small and handcrafted. It's, you know, like people talk about handcrafted and people talk about buying local, but do you actually do it? You know, like I know for a fact, you've seen me here. All
yeah.
I'm here at least out of 7 days, at least 3 to 4.
Yeah.
I buy for business. I buy for home.
Yeah.
I buy for pleasure.
Yeah.
I come in and just cook something.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they let me come in and cook.
Yeah.
I'll just come in and cook. I mean, like, you know, this is it's entertaining to me to be here. It's a good community feel. And it's always fun to see people here eating, like, you know, like, or standing on the little bar right there at the front.
Yes.
Outside.
Looking out the window. Yeah.
You know, like, and once Nate figures out how to sell wine by the glass, he's going to be
selling. Yeah.
You know, like, do little charcuterie plates. That's what I tell
them.
Yeah. Charcuterie.
I mean, so we do have people that come and get the beer because, like, Nueces sells us the beer here. So we have, like, there's like a good price for the Nueces beer when people come and buy. So it's like, yeah, you are right. It's like we partner with a lot of local businesses.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And then that local sense, like, you know, people who buy from here, buy from Nueces, buy from, you know, Lazy Beach, buy from, from Twinning Farms. Next thing you know, it's like this whole community of like people supporting people. And then you think, oh, well, I'm not part of that. No, you come and you buy from one person, you know, you're a little part of that community.
Yeah.
And those dinners, that's what they're going to be too. They're going to be little parts, you know, those microcosms of the community.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to enjoy it and they're going to enjoy being in this part of town. Because, you know, people try to save this part of town at night. It's everything's safe.
Yeah.
It's an old stigma.
Yeah.
And I think people, you know, want to promote that stigma because they want to go to the other side of town.
Yeah.
They want to go to the strip malls. They want to go to the big businesses.
Yeah.
And they forget that those businesses aren't the businesses that are fueling your community, you know? Sure, some of them were like local community.
Yeah.
You know, they helped the community. But like today, I think it's Serptoberfest.
Yeah.
That's the Lomaxes. That's all local.
The local.
Yeah. You know, and then that's downtown. That's literally community. There's not another corporate coming.
And when you go downtown as well, a lot of those places, like, you make sausages and then they sell.
Yeah, they go. Yeah. You know, like, you know, the food here goes everywhere. And that's, you know, I think that's a testament to, like, what they do here. And, like, you know, the Josh and Nathan's sense of community.
Yeah.
You know, they don't talk about being part of the community and not do anything. They, you know, like, they sponsor things and they, I always see their stuff somewhere, you know, like you go to Chili Cook-Off and the whole paella thing that y'all went to.
That was fun.
Yes.
I'm not sure we did too, what we just said. It was fun.
But, you know, like I saw some of the other things. So you held your own, right? But, you know, that's the thing where like it's a sense of community. And that night, I think it's going to be special because you come in here and you have to remember and you have to realize like the owner and the people who run this place are people who you see here every day.
Yeah.
You're never going to come in here and not see Josh and Nathan here.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Or the Nigerian cowboy. Or Luke. Or Stoney.
Yeah.
Or Captain Tom. Captain Tom and Little Tom. But you're always going to see those people. You know that it's not going to come in one day and then you're not going to see any of those people. They're all going to be here. You know, and these are going to be the same people. Like Nathan's going to, the owner himself's going to serve you that night.
Yeah, yeah.
The owner's going to be out here shaking your hand, talking to you. And you're going to know that, like, the next day he's going to get up at 6 a.m. They're going to be here making sausage again.
Yeah.
You know, Saturday morning they're going to be here. Sunday morning they're going to be here. I think that's amazing. You know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. The sense of community is good. It is. And I think a lot of people that come in here, they do appreciate that. And how it's like small and it's not too big. And so, yeah, it's like, it's, yeah, it's. And, it's definitely fun to be part of.
And it's those things, like you said, small, and, you know, it's not big, but it's still quality.
It's still quality, right.
It's
right.
Really high quality, you know? Like, I don't even buy, you know, proteins at chains anymore because of the quality.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know? Like, I've never gotten a bum piece of meat here.
That's not, yeah. I do appreciate that. So, now people are going to come and taste your cooking using some of this product in here. So, and I'm hearing it's a 5-course meal. So can you take us through like your menu and, you know, what you're thinking?
I'll touch on the wines also, because I don't want
to. Okay.
It's going to be a 5-course. And the central focus was to be local. Everything we're putting on this menu is around here. Local, you know, people talk about local, but local is always within 200 miles where you're located.
Mm.
So everything here is locally sourced. Everything is going to be seasonal. So it's a hard push towards a fall menu. You know, there'll be pumpkin, ginger, root vegetables, golden, you know, beets, carrots, parsnips, all things that are going to be in season right now.
Yeah.
It's nothing like I'm going to like, oh, you know, like here's broccolini. Broccolini's not in season. You know, I'm not going to like go out of bounds to find things that aren't seasonal. And, so it's going to start off. We're going to have a smoked oyster blini. So we're going to get some local oysters.
Yeah.
Because we can get oysters now from the Maxis. So yeah. Amazing. I'm going to put them on this. I'm going to mesquite smoke them. Finish them with creme fraiche, some scallion, pickled shallots, and we're going to do it over a potato blini, which is sort of like, you know, a little potato cake.
Okay.
Like a little pancake. And I know that's going to be paired with a Jose Brut Blanc de Blanc. So this is like, you know, a white of white. This is a, you know, a very real French champagne. It's not a sparkling. It's from the Champagne region of France.
Great from Champagne.
Yeah. This was all, the wine list was curated by Cory Zamora, which is like the town's, I think right now, only level 3 sommelier, certified sommelier. And I'm like, we were saying earlier, we're chefs. So he's a level 3 sommelier. The only thing left is master sommelier.
Okay.
And those, you know, that's, I'm sure he's working towards it. He's a great guy. I'm sure everybody around town knows him.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, it's a great menu. Like I looked at the menu that he paired it with the food, and it was fantastic. It's a trip around the world. It's a wine from France. It's a wine from Australia, a wine from Italy, a wine from Napa, and then a wine from Australia. So he really like was very knowledgeable with this pairing.
Mm.
So then the second course we have a curry bisque, a curry pumpkin bisque with a roasted brine pork loin, pork belly. So I'm going to get the pork belly Monday brine slow, and then I'm going to roast it the night of, and it's going to be over a roasted pumpkin bisque with pepitos, which are toasted pumpkin seeds, some ginger creme fraiche, and that's going to be paired with the Benito Ferrava Greco, the Tufa, Terra, the Uva. That's a mouthful. So it's gonna be a red. Wait, is it a red or a wine? No, I forgot.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Well, come on, you find out.
I have to remember too. No, I think it's a white. No, you know what? It is a white. It's a white. But I know this one has a sharp bitter almond flavor.
Okay.
And it's going to pair really well with the pumpkin and the pork belly. The next one, we're going to have an arugula salad, which, you know, some baby arugula, some golden beets, some red beets. We're going to do a pomelo vinaigrette, which a pomelo is a kind of a tangerine. It's a seasonal citrus. And we're going to finish it with a pumpkin spice halloumi cheese. So the halloumi cheese, it's from Cyprus. It's a mix of goat, sheep, and cow milk. And it comes out, I think I've told you, well, I've mentioned it before. It comes out in a block, kind of like tofu. So it's got it's got a good body to it. So it can take a grill. It can take a sear. I've seen them breaded and fried. ours, we're going to season with pumpkin spice and throw it on the flat top, give it some nice color, and then finish off the salad with it. And that's going to be served with a Rioja, so a red wine from Spain. And it's a big wine. It's not an overwhelming wine, but it's got a lot of complex flavors to it.
Mm.
And I'm interested to see that one. I haven't tried that one yet. And then we're going to move on to the entree. And the entree, the special thing about that is... Nate has a ribeye and a sirloin dry aging just for this event. They've been aging since the 29th or the 9th of September. And the other day, I think he put up a video where we took them out of the dry ager and flipped them over and we threw some tallow on there.
Yeah.
Beef tallow, which is rendered from the kidney, to give it more flavor as they're aging because, every primal has a fat cap.
Yeah.
And the bottom is never as fatty. So we flipped them over, poured some tallow on there, and the last 10 days, they're going to age with more fat on them. Mm. And I think they're going to be amazing. And what an amazing thing to go somewhere and you're going to get to, like, it's not like a lobster, like, you don't see that anymore. We're like, oh, I want to eat that lobster.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. You're going to come up here and you're going to decide, well, I either want the sirloin or I want the ribeye. And you get to see it. They'll take it to the back. We'll cut it off and cook it that same night. You know, it's not pre-cut. It's cut the day of.
Yeah.
And, you know, these things right now, once you become a fan of aged.
Oh, man, you're not going back.
Yeah, I think you talked about, like, how you, like, weren't ready for the flavor.
No, I was not. I know. And now I'm not a person that would have ever eaten, like, raw meat before. But, like, when he was cleaning one before and I took a piece, I ate it. I was like, this is phenomenal. It's so good.
Yeah, the dry aging really does something to meat. You know, the smell is like, gets this big nutty almond smell.
Yeah.
And I know people look at it and think, oh, it's not good. No, even better.
It's delicious.
It's even better. There's something about taking the moisture out of anything.
Yeah.
Makes it better. You know, a tomato's good. Dried tomato's better.
Yeah.
A grape is good, but a raisin is better. You know, like there's something about taking the moisture out of something that really gives it the essence of its flavor.
Right.
And these steaks are going to be phenomenal. We're going to sear them to order to tip. We're going to serve it with some roasted root vegetables at night, seasonal veg.
Yeah.
It'll be some golden beets, some carrots, parsnips, sweet potatoes, turnips. And we're going to serve it with a potato fondant, pommes fondant. So you get a potato, you cut into a cylinder, and you slow roast, you slow braise it in chicken stock. I'm going to do this one slow braised in beef tallow.
Mm.
And then at the end, it gets seared. So it has like nice little crust to it. And we're going to finish off the red wine demi-glace. And that's getting the first American wine that day. That's going to get a Paradigm Cab out of Napa.
Yeah.
And it's a big wine with rube, blackberries, cherries, plums. It's going to be a good complement to the steak.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like just getting the steak from here already and dry aged is going to be phenomenal. And then that night we'll finish off with since I also bake, we're going to finish off with an old-fashioned molasses cake. Down home, south kind of thing. I'm going to make a molasses cake, you know, with molasses cake, ginger, candy ginger, and a spiced buttercream.
Mm.
And the cake's going to be good. I'm not even going to
lie. Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm salivating over this entire menu.
Yeah.
I'm like, hell, wait.
The star, though, will be the pairing, the final pairing. They're going to... Corey picked a wine from Australia, which one of my favorite wines, and he knows that I worked with Corey before. It's Molly Duker. And this wine is going to be a Shiraz, and it's called Blue White Boy, which I won't ruin the story. He'll tell you the full story about Blue White Boy, what the Blue White Boy is. Like, you know, they have five lines of wine, and they all have a story. And like, I'm such a fan. I know all of them. I know the stories.
But I had one of them was really good. I don't remember which bottle it was, but I remember... Nathan had a bunch.
Shiraz.
Okay.
I think it wasn't the Boxer. It might have been Boxer. It was the one with the Boxer on it because they have very distinct labels.
Maybe, but it was empty.
Yeah. they're good. And they're good wines. They're like, they have a high alcohol content, which doesn't make them the good part of it. But if you have a problem with sulfites.
Yeah, I do.
These wines are aged with nitrogen. Yeah. So the sulfites are lower. So nitrogen somehow lowers the sulfite.
Okay.
And which makes it interesting because then for you to age the wine, you could open it earlier and let it breathe. But there's a thing called the Molly Shooker Twist.
Okay.
The Molly Duker Twist. You get bored and look it up. It's called the Molly Duker Twist. They have a whole video on it. They have a fest where every year they do it. You flip the bottle down.
Okay.
And you shake it
aside. Okay.
The nitrogen redistributes throughout the wine and it releases the flavor of the wine after the age. It's interesting. Yeah. But this wine, I know this wine is it's not a sweet wine. It's a big, bold red. Because one of the things that Corey's been doing lately is he's not lately, 10 years.
Yeah.
But it's a thing that's become very popular. Is he ends his desserts with a red wine, a big satisfying wine, instead of something sweet. Because you just had a sweet dessert.
Yeah.
And then you can have something sweet. And you like
it's too much sweet.
It's kind of ending a sentence without a period.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And, you know, like, and this, well, with this wine, it's kind of more like an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Wine. I've had this wine, and this wine is by far one of my favorite wines.
Mm.
And, you know, when the first taste, you get a lot of notes of dark chocolate, blackberries, blueberries, and then it has a long finish, about a minute long finish after you drink it. And you get like tobacco and some, Palo Santo, like you know, I don't know what they call it in Australia, but I know
Palo Santo.
Yeah, so you get this nice finish, like if you almost smoked a cigar.
Yeah,
and then you get to drink it again and get the dark chocolate.
Yeah,
and I think it's gonna be really good, and I think it's gonna be a good showcase for not only the product here and a lot of local products, because you know after I do all this, the night of, I'll tell you where I sourced everything.
Okay,
I'll be open for questions.
Yeah,
and one thing I've never done is keep secrets like about recipes, like you know. I go to events with other chefs, and people are like, "Hey, what's the recipe for this?" I was like, "You got a pen? You know?"
Yeah,
I'll write it down. I don't because it's not a secret. There's
what is it? A lot of people on social media call that gatekeeping.
gatekeeping. There's no gates to keep. You know, like every time I come up to a problem, I think about something I learned when I was in music school. I studied music in Kingsville, in Kingsville, and I had a professor who was a doctor of music composition.
Okay.
And he always told me, like, I would get stuck on something, you know, like you get in your head when you're like an artist.
Yeah.
And I could never figure, like, get stuck on a melody. And he's like, you know, he's all like, one of my professors, and he names like one of America's greatest composers.
Okay.
That he studied with. And I'm like, you know, like, really?
Casually.
Yeah, casually. Like, oh, my friend Aaron, you know, Eric Copeland said this, you know, like you won Pulitzer Prize winning, you know, composer, telling another Pulitzer Prize winning composer, telling me, some kid who's stuck on writing a melody, you know, that there's only in this world, and this has been proven by MIT, 100,333 possible musical melodies in the world.
Mm.
Given all the notes that we have, all the scales that we have, all the rhythms that we have, there is already a finite, limited amount of that melody you should make.
Yeah.
But yet, we've been making music for thousands of years. So, it's just how you see it. Like, you know, all the building blocks are there for everybody to make any kind of way. And if you want that recipe, you can have the recipe. You know, like, if you make something and somewhere you think, oh, I got this from this.
Yeah.
I'm just glad that, you know, like you wanted to try. You wanted to go home and try. I will give you recipes all day long. I will, you know, like I have books at home that I'm never going to, you know, like use again, like recipes, and like you can have them, you know.
Yeah.
There's no secret. The secret is just the hard work.
Mm.
You know, if you're willing to work to do this, you should make it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And sometimes that could even be the base and you can just figure out how to make it yours or like have your own stats to it.
Exactly.
And
you know, like a couple years ago, I was real big on using okra for different things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I pickled okra. I made okra pico de gallo.
Yeah.
I made stuffed okra. Like I went on this thing where I wanted to make a bunch of okra. Okra became my like little like summer project.
Yeah.
And then I got a call from Grow Local, horse market. They're like, hey, do you have any okra recipes that you want to come demonstrate? And I was like, amazingly, I have a bunch. So, you know, like I wrote down the recipes and I went and for 2 hours, I was out there at the little art center making okra. And it was great. And like people were like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, here's all the recipes.
Oh, that is.
Go make your
okra. I'm going to ask you something. I love okra.
It's good.
Yeah, it is delicious. I mean, that's a gentleman that I don't know why I never thought about this, but one of our customers today, this Paul, came in and he just bought some okra because we get it from Terra Madre farm. And so he was like, he's going to go grill them. I was like, why didn't I ever think of grilling okra? It's never.
Yeah, people were like, when I told them I was going to put pico de gallo on my okra, they're like, that didn't sound good. I was like, nope,
no,
it's going to be great.
It's going
to be great. And it did. And, you know, it does. It goes good. Because everybody does it fried.
Yeah.
But we did stuffed and, you know, it was stuffed, fried. And then part of the fun was like learning that it's called something else. Like, you know, like, so I would do pickled lady fingers. And everybody's like, why are you calling them lady fingers? Because in parts of Asia, they call them ladies' fingers. Because, you know, how that, has that look? Yeah, like that, that little pointer like a
lady. Okay.
So, you know, it was a fun little summer to fun project. And right now, my fun project is baking and piping.
Yeah.
I have become fascinated with piping.
Yeah.
I went to this 2-star Michelin restaurant in Chicago, and they served me butter, like piped like ribbon. I had never seen it. And, you know, like, and it's another thing where I was like, I asked the chef, I was like, how did you do this?
Dude, yeah.
And he told me, like, nothing. He's like, do it. Go home, pipe butter.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's amazing. Like, you're this world famous 2-star Michelin chef, and you just told me how to do it, like, nothing. And it was fantastic. And I did it, and I thought I was so happy with it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because, you know, like, it's going to, and this night is going to be like, this one's going to be, I'm not going to say tame, but this is going to be a nice, pleasant dinner.
Yeah.
Nothing like way out there yet.
Yeah.
You know, some of the presentation will be a little different, but the food is just good, wholesome, like straightforward food.
Yeah.
The plating will be good and everything will look nice. And, I think sometimes you learn as a cook, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it. I have 100 colors. I don't need all the colors.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I just need 3 colors.
Sometimes simplicity.
Yeah, simplicity is refinement. Some you find that you refine something by making it simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and like...
You sound like my professor in college.
Oh, because you learn. You learn. I remember I used to run some specials when I was at the Corpus Christi Yacht Club, and I would put 14, 15 things on a plate. Yeah. And I'd be like, yes, that would take 10 minutes to plate. You know, and when I got 5 of them, I was in the weeds.
Yeah.
And I was like, how can I do this quicker? And like, not, and it went quicker. It was like, are all these real things or are they like ego and vanity? And then you're like, I don't need this much. I just need to refine it. And I've seen that in a bunch of chefs as you go, like they make in their career, they make these amazing things. And then I don't know, maybe somewhere along the line, you find out like it just needs to be good.
Yeah.
It just needs to be good. It needs to look good. It needs to taste good. And it needs to satisfy. And everything else is kind of like ego-driven, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, but at the same time, there are some times where I get some requests for dinners or I do events and they're like, really want it all out. You know, like, it's got to be mind-blowing. And okay, we'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're like, I just want really good food. And I was like, can do that too.
Yeah,
and I think this one's going to be really good food. Yeah. And I think it's going to be a good introduction to like, we had talked about doing holiday events, you know, employee parties, business parties, you know, they have the space here.
Yeah.
Oh, real quick, I became a we here.
No, go ahead. It's a we. It's a community thing.
Yeah, and you know, like, and I think it wouldn't be bad to book an event here, to book dinners here, to book, you know, like after hours things. Christmas coming up, Thanksgiving's coming up,
New Year's Eve parties.
Yeah, you know, I don't have any New Year's Eve plans yet. I was like, we should do a New Year's Eve dinner. And then I think, you know, people want that. People want a quality dinner. And I don't think people mind paying for quality.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, like, we could have given you, like, 3 courses and, like, not made it worth your while, but this is a good menu. You know, and some people are going to be like, well, the price. No. You know, unfortunately, you do get what you pay for.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a bargain and you're looking for you know, like, I get it. You want to save some money. This isn't always the thing because you're not going to get the quality you
want. Sometimes you can get the quantity, you're not going to get the quality, you know? So, yeah, sometimes it's everything's economics. It's all give and take.
Yeah, you know, it's a 5-course dinner with 5 amazing wines.
Yeah.
And a real champagne.
The way you've described all of this, the wine, the like the cooking processes and all of those things, it makes me just think, like, this is just like art.
Yeah.
You know, you go to experience art, you know, that's what you go to, either at the movies, either at the museum, whatever, now at a venue with a chef, you know, you're going to experience art, how they interpret
yeah
like the world through food, you know.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize that they're part of it. Like I could cook the most amazing meals all day, but if nobody ate them, I wouldn't know. You know, and it's not for me, it's for like, I'd like to see people enjoy things. Like, you know, when I come to help out and I'm cooking burgers, I'm glad to hear people love the hamburger.
Yeah.
You know, and some people will be like, oh, it's just a burger. No, it's not just a burger. It's food. Food is the most basic sustaining thing in the world.
Yeah.
If
you know, every culture,
food is the thing. Yeah. If you don't love food, I don't know, like.
Are you even alive?
Yeah, well, you're not alive because, like, you know, that's a love language. I think I've read that love language book. It doesn't have food in there. Food should be the number one thing. You know, that's my love language.
There you go. See, that's the title of your next book. You know, so we probably will end on this, but I keep on thinking about art that people that take whatever you usually would experience at a most basic level, but they have their own interpretation of it, and then they add a way for you to experience it in a complete different way. Like, everyone knows me, I like football or soccer, you know, but one of my favorite players of all time is Ronaldinho.
Oh, yeah.
And so Ronaldinho, and people wonder, like, why? Like, because it's like, when I watched him play, I saw the most free human being on the entire pitch. Like, he wasn't encumbered by the restrictions of what people have put before. No. He was just there to just experience and just have this beautiful way of playing and be free. You know, so like that's what I'm getting from, like, even like the meal. Because I'm like, I never thought about doing pumpkin like that. Why would I want to add pumpkin with this, with that? You know, it's like, but it's like you're taking all of these things and you're just having your own interpretation of how this thing, and you just, you know. So hopefully people will come and experience that.
Yeah. My mind was Malathron. The hand of God.
Oh.
That was my favorite. That was my favorite soccer movie.
Oh, I used to know the fit, and like the saying in Spanish by heart. Because like right after the game, he had the interview and he was like, sometimes it goes like this, and sometimes it's the hand of God. I was like, oh, Lord have mercy.
That was my...
Yeah. And for those who do not know, he's talking about the imperial and imperious Diego Maradona, Diego Armando Maradona, one of the greatest to ever play this sport.
A lot of specials on him.
He
was a character.
He was, to say the least.
And I've got it. And that was Isabella.
Yeah.
I think, thank you so much. I think we covered a lot of ground. I think people, you know, like, I was worried, and, you know, like, everybody's worried when you do something, are people going to get it?
Yeah.
Like, I was worried, you know, nobody likes me, nobody's going
to. Yeah. Now, bro, I from all the sales of all the, I'm seeing a lot of people. It's gonna be a thing that people will enjoy, and I'm really excited that people are gonna come to a historic building like this.
Yeah,
to
I think have, me too.
Yeah. Yeah, to have like a meal, and to just experience old corpus with new corpus and the future and the experiment. It's just this beautiful, like this. This town has a lot to offer people, and I'm excited for people to come and experience.
I am too. And I feel like it won't be the first, and I don't think it'll be the only one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, five things, and, you know, like, next time it'll be five more things. And I think, you know, not every weekend, because, you know, you don't want
to. Right.
You know, like, it should be special.
Special, yeah.
And, you know, like, that's what people don't realize. A special is special because it's special.
Yeah.
It's not special just because you say it's special. It's, you know. It's and, you know, like I said, it's a lot of community, and like, considering next week is Dia de los Muertos,
yeah.
A lot of things going on. We have a good turnout.
Yeah,
having a good turnout. Like,
we are.
When he told me we were close to selling out, I was shocked. I was like, amazing.
And there wasn't too much like advertising about it either. It was so like,
yeah,
we needed to, but we are getting good, great responses.
Yeah. I think this one will be the word of mouth will get the next one going.
No, yeah.
And then that'll get, you know. Who knows where it's going to go?
That's
the best part.
Who knows?
With Nate and all you guys here, who knows where this is going?
Who knows where this is going? And on that note, I'd like to thank you, Chef Prado, for being on this inaugural episode of the Hanging Tender I have been your host. I am the Nigerian Cowboy. Please follow us on social media. You just go to Borai on social media. Anywhere you get your social media, just follow Borai and find this podcast anywhere you get your podcast. Like, share, subscribe, give it to your friends. Recommend this podcast. I am Sadiq, the Nigerian Cowboy. Chef Prado is going to be cooking the meal. And we will see y'all very soon. Thank you, and see you at the dinner.